This is Taco Incidents, where we learn the secrets of breakthrough brand experience from the most brilliant leaders while we're on the search for the perfect taco. I'm Scott Porter, entrepreneur, brand experience strategist, and I'm completely obsessed with tacos. Thanks so much for joining us. Join us on Taco Stop number 9, The Visitor is God. I met up with Binod Rai on Taco Tuesday at Tacos Mi Caramelo during his visit to Utah. 28 years ago, Binod and his father started Insight Himalaya. They lead expeditioners on treks to Mount Everest Base Camp in Nepal, where the spirit of Namaste is alive and well, and infused into everything they do as they literally take brand experience to a whole new level. I wanted to learn why he believes in the power of brand experience, what he does to create it, and how it's helped him thrive. All over tacos. It really doesn't get much better than this.
But would you say this is the most authentic to the original stuff that you have in Mexico?
Close to the authentic? Pretty darn close.
No?
Yeah. Go. Oh. This is one of the best places that I've been to in Utah. Yeah.
There was that lady there who was saying it's the best place.
Yeah. And she's from Orange County. I mean, in LA, in Southern California, there's a lot of amazing Mexican food.
Oh.
Yeah, so this is where she comes.
Wow.
You should see this place. They'll stay open on the weekends. They don't close. They're open all night long. So 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, this place is full of people.
Because, this place?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can see.
Because everyone comes here after they like go to the movies, yeah. After they go out with friends.
Coming back from work.
Coming back from a late shift.
Yeah.
Or like going out dancing.
Yeah.
They'll come back and have tacos. That's like the taco culture.
Okay, so this only does tacos?
Oh, yes, tacos and taco variation. So like this is a little bit of a variation.
Yeah.
It's basically a double taco is what we just had. He's going to bring us some more. Vino, I went to go get some more.
Wow, I love it. Fantastic. Yeah.
Tell me all about what you do. Tell me all about your business. And I mean, you're on Everest, you're on the mountain. And you said there's 8 of the tallest mountains in the world are the mountains that you...
We have in Nepal.
Guide.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're in Nepal, Himalayas. You're not necessarily summiting, but you're going to...
We are organizing high altitude treks, all sorts of treks in Nepal. We're talking about trekking at the elevation of maybe 7,000 feet all the way up to 19,000 feet.
Okay.
Going over high passes. That's almost 80% of the work that I do.
Okay.
And then the rest of the work is providing logistics for one-off trips. So this could be maybe a documentary film, a charity trek, someone who wants to do the highest swim in the world.
Fascinating, right?
Yeah, definitely.
The highest swim in the world.
Swim in the world.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And so you coordinate all of that then?
Coordinate all of that sort of thing. And if you really think about it, that's the standard stuff. You know, when you talk about trekking, behind the scene, it's always logistics. And for a smooth holiday, a smooth trip, you know, you need to think ahead, just planning about everything from food to equipment to on which day where you're going to get, and then all the other things that could happen in terms of problems.
Preventative stuff.
You need to think ahead, have a backup plan, and then eventually the extraction at the end. Make sure that everyone comes out safe. So that's logistics anyway. So we use that strength to then do the 20% of the other stuff, which is, in a way, very interesting for me. But then the challenge is that you're doing something that is not standard. It's different.
Yeah.
So these are the things that we do, not only in Nepal, Himalaya, but also parts of India, in Tibet. And I'm also keen to expand the business elsewhere to those areas where I like to go. This happens to be Mongolia. So I was there last year, and I thought the place was fascinating. The people, I just clicked.
Huh.
Especially because you just need to drive half an hour out of the city, and then you are in the middle of nowhere.
Mm.
There's no cities, nothing. You look around, it's just meadows, horses.
No roads.
Cattle. Just one road. One road, and that's it. And you're away. If there was problems, then you would have that. But apart from that, the isolation. And what I also believe is things will change. Looking at what has happened in Nepal and in other countries, things will change. So I feel people should go to Mongolia.
Yeah.
Now.
Before it changes.
Things changes, yeah.
Get a little bit more of the pure experience
Absolutely.
When you're there.
Huh. And then this, yeah, I mean, just
untainted, pure, not tainted yet.
Yes, definitely, yeah. Definitely. And I've been in the trekking business for the last 28 years. I've seen areas where there was nothing we need. There would be a trek that I would trek for 22 days. Mm. And today, the trek, which used to take 22 days, now is a week-long trek. Because now we have roads. And things have changed. And one can get upset about it, but that's progress.
Yeah, right. So how many treks a year are you doing? Like
we're
your
doing,
company leading?
My company, which we're doing something like 20 to 30 treks, which is not a lot. But for us, that's 20 to 30 treks expeditions from...
Usually a week long, or...?
Shortest is a week.
Okay.
The longest is up to 20 days.
Uh-huh.
And as I told you earlier, it can be anything from an easy trek to a very challenging one.
Yeah.
Where you're going over three passes, high passes, your... there's weather to deal with, there's altitude... thin air, but that's the challenge. It's just amazing.
Now, people are all ages. What's the youngest and the oldest?
The youngest we have taken is 8 years old.
Eight, okay.
The oldest, 75. But obviously, the oldest people we've taken, 75, are people who've been trekking, have always been walking. We don't do anything very strenuous.
Okay.
But they enjoy trekking. And one of our specialities is that we... can organize treks for people who are young and senior.
On the same track?
You could say on the same track as well. Because what I believe is there could be a trek which, if you did it in a week, you'd have an excellent experience. If you tried to do that in 4 days, it's going to be hell.
Sure.
So, for us, before any trek, for any client, it's very important for us to listen to what the clients want, what they can do, what they want to do, and then what they can do.
Yeah.
Because sometimes what they want to do is not what they can do.
Sure, sure, sure.
So we gather all that information and then make a good choice for them.
Make it for them.
And
kind of like the tacos, right?
Yeah.
He wants to make it just for us.
Yes.
Yes, right. That's how we want it. That's awesome. Young, old, but people are coming from all over the world, right?
Yes, they're coming from all over the world. When we started the company in 1990, it usually used to be people in the West, as in America, from Canada, and Europe. And now it's been about two years that even people from India, for example, are coming and really enjoying the trek.
Wow.
In October, I have a group of 30 people going to Annapurna Base Camp. And these are people, Indians, they are top executives. They want to do this pretty challenging trek.
Yeah, sure.
And so, yeah, from all different nationalities.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Someday, so I've seen Everest.
Okay.
When we were flying from Kathmandu to Bhutan.
Oh, that's a really good flight because that's one of the really nice flights I like, because on a clear day, if you're flying from Kathmandu to Bhutan, which is like an hour, you're flying parallel to the Himalayas.
Exactly.
And you see the Annapurnas. You don't see the Annapurnas, but you see Everest. You see Kanchenjunga, which is the third highest mountain. So I think you see at least 8,000 meter peaks as you fly. And then there's one point where you're looking down and you see the whole Himalayan range all the way going south.
It was breathtaking.
Okay.
Well, and what really still sticks out in my mind is that we're at cruising altitude and we're like eye level with the top of Everest.
I mean, it was
unbelievable. I mean, here in Utah, we were talking about this earlier. It's like these mountains are, we call them mountains, but for you, they're hills, right? They're just little hills. Because the Himalayas are just like mountains on steroids.
Yeah.
Majestic and huge.
One thing we like to tell our clients when they come to Nepal is your mountains end where mountains start.
Right, yeah.
So that's a good point to consider, especially for altitude.
Wow.
So in England, the highest mountain, Ben Nevis, is 4,500 feet, which is the altitude of Kathmandu.
Exactly, right? So it starts there. Oh, man. What is it that drives people to go on treks with you? What's their motivation? Like, are they trying to find themselves? Are they looking for, like, an appreciation for nature, for God's creations? Are they just enjoying a vacation and they want to be physically active. Like, what is it that is driving them to come to Nepal?
And people who come to Nepal and do the trekking are a certain group of people.
Okay.
What I do want to say is, like, sometimes people ask me, you know, do you have difficult clients, horrible clients? And I say, well, in actual fact, 28 years, I've never come across any difficult client, because my thinking is, my view is that trekking is such an activity that attracts a certain type of people. Mm. And when I say that, I think it's actually Nepal is a certain type of country, that it attracts a certain type of people and is trekking the mountains. So there are people who like nature, people who like walking, and maybe the fact that they know the Himalayas are the highest peak in the world, therefore they will be more prepared. People who love nature, people who love trekking, so people who would be quite compatible to travel in the Himalayas. That's my experience. But then talking about the interests of the clients who come on a holidays with us, could be, so they've heard about Nepal from a very young age, so they like to come. Their parents have come before, they would like to come. They're on a charity trip. They like a challenging trek. And so that's the reason that people come to Nepal. But I personally think if you like trekking, you have to come to Nepal, because we've got the highest mountains. We have so much variety. And then the other thing is, if you are interested in mountaineering, how can you not come to Nepal? We have the 8 of the top 10 mountains in the world. We have it in Nepal. You have to come to Nepal.
Yeah. You have to.
Yeah, so.
Well, and not only that, but I've been in Nepal twice. My experience in Nepal has really changed my mentality about life in a lot of ways. Really. And I didn't even hike with you. And I can't wait to at some point. But
in what way do you say that?
It all boils down to one word for me, and that is namaste.
Oh, okay.
Right? I mean,
do you know the...
Tell me how you describe namaste, because for me, it's impacted my perspective on life and our time here on Earth, the way that we interact with each other. But you tell me, how do you define namaste?
I think when we translate namaste, obviously when we tell people, when there's a visitor coming to Nepal the first time and we say, you know, how do you say hi? How do you say bye? And we say, there's one word. It's called namaste. So namaste means hi, and namaste means bye if you say it in the right time. But then we also say that it has a deeper meaning than just say hi, because in English, I think hi is just, you know, hello, right?
It's a greeting.
It's just a greeting, and it's a good thing to say. But namaste is said properly or done properly when you join your two hands. And you join your two hands, and you are actually not doing it like this, but you're bringing close to your heart. And you're looking, it's eye contact, and you're telling the person namaste. And so when you also say namaste, you bow your head. And so the deeper meaning, obviously, is I worship the spirit within you. I respect you at the same level, if not higher, as a spirit. And I want to be hospitable to you. And I think it also goes back to the point where traditionally in Nepal, if a traveler came to a village, and when you talk about a village, it's, you know, not all villages are affluent, not all houses are affluent, but if a traveler came to your doorstep, he said, can you give me a shelter? It's dark, because, you know, the village is no hotels, no motels, whatever. So can I spend a night? And in theory, and it is practiced to this day, where the visitor is allowed to stay in the house, maybe not inside, but in the porch outside. And the person needs to feed him and not charge him any money. Because we believe when we do that, then we are also serving the gods. Hmm. I think one very interesting thing is in Nepal, with the tourism and everything, the tourism department in Nepal also promotes this belief, which has always been done for centuries in Nepali culture, is the visitor is God. Hmm. So while you are serving the visitor, you might be serving God.
Wow.
And people can relate to that, because you know in Kathmandu there's so many temples and so on. And those things are to serve people, and that gods used to live among the humans. Mm. There are temples at every lane. People can relate to that. And I think that's really good, because that definitely helps Nepal's tourism as well. And even my child, my son, my daughter, we always tell them to say namaste. Because with young people, you know, they'd rather say hi than namaste. They do that. And once you are used to that, then it's beautiful.
Wow. That was so beautifully described. I felt that very deeply when I was in Nepal. We were in rural villages.
Okay.
Hearing you say that, you know, they invited people into their homes, we stayed with a family when we did like a mini trekking experience. Yeah. And I will tell you, without any guile or without any like hesitation at all, there was such a beautiful spirit of welcoming. This idea of the divine in me recognizes the divine in you. So powerful that the visitor is God. How impactful that could be on all of our mentality. And I think that's what, how we interact with each other. I mean, if we treated each other as, if you're God, I need to treat you with this utmost respect, right?
Yes.
And utmost attention to your needs.
Yes.
It can change everything that you do in your life.
In your life, absolutely.
And one of the things that was so impactful to me about Nepal is that it's very real. It's not just lip service.
Yes, definitely.
And it's not just
and one
like,
of the things that we as a company and I personally, I want to make the effort to carry on doing treks in Nepal, even though now, compared to 20 years ago, it's more expensive. It's more expensive to do what we're doing. Yeah, the style of trekking is called Himalayan style of trekking, where we stay in a group of 10 people.
Okay.
We have 30 porters. We have 5 kitchen team. And 4 guides. So imagine, so it's for one person, we have almost 4 to 5 people to look after. And some people might not like that. Some people, maybe from the West, find it a bit uncomfortable. But I say, we are creating jobs.
Yeah.
So I like the idea that we are creating jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the villages, carrying stuff on their backs, 30 kgs up and down the hill, is a part of life. And when they trek with us, they get hard cash. So I want to continue doing that because I find myself more passionate to be able to show that Nepal. And the Nepal I really want to show is that Nepal which sees people in that light.
Yeah.
Because now with progress and so on, those things are fading away. And that's natural. But then there are also other things like sometimes in villages, we have gone through a house and the villager stops us and say, you know, have some fruits, you know, or I have some milk and yogurt I make every day. You're a traveler, have something.
Yeah.
And I say, like, how much? And says, like, you're joking? Why would I charge you?
Right.
Money,
right.
You know? And sometimes I have friends who are on me and say, you have to pay this money, right? Because they're so poor.
Yeah.
But again, if you pay the money, then again, you're going to lose things. So, you know, all those things are there.
How was the second taco?
That was fabulous. I was just like, hit the nail on the head.
That's what put it over the edge.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Nice.
When you're in Mexico City, one of the saddest things is the physical limitations of your stomach.
Mm.
You can only eat so much because it's so good. You just want it. Keep eating.
Yes.
And you just...
That's quite filling.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Filling.
Well, and that one has cheese and double tortilla. I know that in Insight Himalaya, one of the things that's the most important to you is creating an exceptional customer experience. You are doing this in one of the most dangerous, like, challenging environments.
Right.
Tell me about what that looks like. Tell me about how you create a world-class experience on the highest mountain in the world.
One of the things that's very important to us, and I believe that's the backbone of our system, is our staff, our people. My father, obviously, my father and myself, we started the business.
28 years ago.
He was 45, he just left the army. I was 18, I just finished high school and learning the ropes, but really enjoying it. I think as a company, we were very lucky to have my dad because he was the person who handpicked the people, handpicked the boys, and then trained them from scratch. He also had the experience of at least 5 years of trekking with other companies. Mm. And so he was able to observe what was bad. What are the bad habits and way you could improve on? And therefore, when we started the business, he was able to handpick the boys and train them from scratch. Now, that's tough because you are working with people who probably don't know about maybe even hygiene to start off with and cooking and so on. But then one of the good things about that is you are starting from basically zero. They haven't picked up any bad habits. And if they are good learners and they're genuine, they are learning the right things right from day one. And so the personnel that we have today, at least 15 years with us, if not 20 years, they were young men. Most of them weren't married, but now they have families and so on. And so that was one thing, handpicking the right people. But then the other thing is also you start to think, how did they stay with you for so long? Whereas in many places you would go and you'd see there's new stuff every time. And I think one of the reasons is because we, right from day one, we accepted them as family. We thought it was our responsibility to look after them properly. And that definitely paid off. And one of the reasons is basically, we liked what we were doing. We care of our people. And that paid off over the years. Mm-hmm. And so we keep doing that. For our boys, it's we look after their health, we look after the immediate families. Say, for example, at the moment we have a daughter of one of our cooks who's had some problems. And so every month or so she comes to Kathmandu and we do all the checkup and so on. Oh. The other thing is also many companies since the last 5 years after the earthquake, they thought the best thing was to lose the staff. So they went on to losing their permanent staff and then taking up the freelance. They thought that's the best thing because, you know, protecting the business and maybe cutting the overheads. But in our case, we thought, no, this is our chance to really pay back to our people. And therefore, we did not lose them throughout the period, almost a year, very lean, no business. We look after them, and we should, because our staff are really, caring, genuine, and so on. And one of the very beautiful things that I've experienced is every time the clients come back, we have clients coming back 7 times, 8 times, and they say, oh, okay, Suksing, Bagbir. And they actually send me an email saying, can you have Bagbir go on my trek? Can you have Suksing coming on this trek?
They specifically say, yeah, request
Suksing's always there. Bagbir's always there. And can I have this cook? And maybe sometimes, may not, because maybe, you know, that's the cook for a bigger team and so on and so forth. So that is one of the very important things that we have realized and what we really give attention to. The other thing is also attention to detail. Say, for example, our boys, you know, cooks, it's quite difficult for them to work on the trek, meaning even for the cooks, they have to cook on the move. Moving from trekking from A to B is for us hard work, but for them that's not work. Work begins when you get to camp and you start cooking.
Right,
moving from
right.
A to B is, totally. is not important.
Right.
You need to work, you need to be able to walk, you need to be able to carry a 30 kg pack, yes. But then you need to be smiling and working. And I always tease my chefs cook the best when there's a storm.
Yeah.
For some reason, the food tastes really good.
Better.
And there's three or four boys hanging onto the tent and they're cooking food. And the food is like amazing. And people are like, wow, did you cook that? Or was, was it dropped off by helicopter or someone picked it up? So that's the way we do that. And that happens.
Now how does that happen?
That happens by, number one, planning ahead.
Okay.
Before every trek. Every menu is decided. We go to the point as to say on day three, we are 10,000 feet. We won't have sandwiches and salad. We'll have soup and stew. Makes sense to be at altitude. But when we are down at sort of 3,000 feet, we're not going to have stew and hot soup. We're going to have salads and sandwiches and maybe a wrap or something like that.
Sure.
So everything is taken into account. And how do you do that? With experience.
Yeah.
So we go to that attention to detail.
Yeah.
But then the most important thing is what we do is we retrain our cooks every time.
Huh.
So after, so before
constant,
every season. Yeah. Like, because one of the things that the disadvantage they have is when they go back to the village, they cook local food. They don't cook, well, a Western or, the sort of cooking you do on the trek. So there's what my dad likes to call the drilling technique.
Drilling.
Where drilling.
Yeah.
You do it until it's really good. And yeah. And then the other thing what we do is, and we love to do, 28 years ago when we started the company, I was 18, he was 45, and he said, when we run the company, we will run it ourselves. We'll stay small. And for me, at 18, I said, hang on, businesses should always be, you know, after 5 years, it should be 200 people. After 8 years, it's
growing,
going to be 300.
Yeah.
No, he said, you stay small. And he said, one of the reason was that he said, I want myself and you to be trekking, staying fit, enjoying trekking, number one priority. And then, obviously, doing the business. And I think with time, 10 years down the road, I understood that. And that made perfect sense. Because if you are with the clients, maybe not on every trek, but on various treks at different elevation, you know exactly what's happening. You don't have to ask your staff, you know, what should I be doing here? What should I be doing?
Yeah.
I know exactly what I should be doing. And then it's not only about taking care of your clients, but also about your staff. Say, for example, a few years ago, I bought Gore-Tex, top-end Gore-Tex jackets, because if my staff is looking after clients and we are at 15,000 feet and cold and so on, and our clients are wearing all the top equipment and the boys have jackets which are leaking, you know, how can you? They'll still be smiling,
right?
Even though they're completely drenched. And I also, when I train the boys on first aid, it's always, you know, you have to look after yourself. If you are ill,
right,
if you are tired and disoriented, right, there's no way you're going to look after them.
Yeah.
So you first. Yeah. And the other thing is, at altitude, we also, you know, we have to look after our clients in a more very personal way. Say, for example, if it's cold, we have to tell them, put on your jacket, put on your woolly hat. And then I all go to the extent of saying, okay, let's take off our pack, start drinking. But I not only say that, but I actually take off my pack.
And you do it,
open the bottle, and drink it myself.
Yeah.
And so when you do that, people understand that and they follow you. And similarly, all my guides need to do the same. They have to look after themselves. And I say, look at the guides. What are they doing? They've got a jacket on, got the gloves on. And the thing is, many a times they don't have to do that because they are like mountain
right,
men.
Right, right, right.
That's tough, but they have to do that. So
to set the example.
Example.
Right?
You know, looking after the people. And then the other things, which is very important, is understanding what the clients would like to do, what they can do, what to deliver.
Yeah.
And obviously, I always like to tell them, yeah, you like to do Everest Base Camp, but there are these areas. And I feel that's fair, isn't it? Like, you know, if someone wants to Everest Base Camp, I can say yes. Inside me, I like to say, yeah, but there is another option. Mm-hmm. And then in the end of the day, it's your call.
Sure.
And those are the things. And the other things, obviously, is using the, you know, state-of-the-art equipment. And for our company, most important is safety.
Mm-hmm.
Safety is very important to the point that we will tell the clients if they need to return. We will tell the clients it's not safe, it's
our
call.
We're going to stop here.
Absolutely.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that goes also while the clients are making the decision which trek they should be going. So sometimes we have a client saying, Vinod, I want to come in July. How would it be? And I say, you shouldn't be coming in July. And it's not that you cannot be trekking, but you can. But you'll have a horrible experience because of the wet, the leeches, and so on. And for me, it's very important that clients have an excellent experience, because if they don't, then the repercussions cannot be
for
good.
For sure.
Yes.
So just to kind of recap what you said about some of the key things that differentiate your business from, because there's a lot of trekking businesses.
Absolutely.
Right?
There's a lot of business out there on the internet, and everybody's trying to sell almost the same holiday and so forth. And also a bit of, you know, copying each other's format.
Sure.
And
yeah.
So on. But I personally feel that all companies should be honest, responsible, and I would also want the companies to take the safety measures, not be greedy and make the
right
decision. And for us, I would like to say Inside Himalaya Treks has always been a good model, and that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
In a way, the situation at the moment is quite good for us,
yeah,
because everybody's going for the standard treks,
yeah,
and there's no one, or very little, doing the off-the-beaten treks where there's no trekkers.
That's what you guys do.
So that's what we do.
That's
so
what
if
you
a
do.
Client
something
wants an
special.
Experience, something different, then that's they should come to us.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, so you said like a foundation is just really your team, who you have on your team.
Absolutely.
And then how you keep them happy.
How
you
keep them happy.
And then your attention to detail.
Yes.
And what was the fourth thing?
And the other thing is also
safety. Of course, safety first.
Safety first. But I know whenever we talk about a trek with the client,
yeah,
I always talk about the safety.
Sure.
Right? Safety is...
Of course.
Is,
well, that makes them feel comfortable.
Absolutely.
Too, right?
Safety, 28 years of trekking, no fatalities. 28 years of trekking, no untoward experience. Why? Because we have anticipated that. Simple things like, say, for example, at nighttime when we camp, we probably are the only company who would set up lights at night and have someone on duty. And I say that we've never had a bad experience.
Mm.
But what I also say is, it's common sense. If you have a light outside the tent, people don't trip over, don't break an ankle.
Of course.
Number one.
Yeah.
But number two, if you had the light out and about and someone just on duty, that will discourage anyone who might want to come into the camp
right
for any reason.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And 28 years.
Wow.
Nothing. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about the level of attention to detail. Because every time Binoy talks to me.
Yes.
He's like,
it's
unbelievable.
Yes.
Like candlelight dinner,
yes,
at, you know, 14,000 feet, 18,000
yes
feet, candlelight dinner. And he says, I have had the best French soup of my life. And I lived in Paris. and my dad cooked for the Queen of England.
Yes.
So he knows good food. Tell me a little bit about what are some of those little attention, little things, simple things that make a big difference. The limes, the salsa, what are those things for you that you guys do that make it special so that every time someone tells me about it, they're talking about your French soup on the top of the mountain?
Yeah. It's about understanding and trying to give the client the best experience. But I think you can only do that properly when you leading the treks yourself.
Sure.
What I start thinking is, if I was on a holiday with Inside Himalaya Treks, what would I want? What I would do better? But then I also think that when you start doing things better, then, you know, where does it end? Like, yeah, are you going to have cutlery or crockery and all that sort of thing? Obviously, there is a fine line as well on that matter.
Sure.
But then I think it's things like, what would I want when I'm up there? And for me, those things were, number one, not anyone being ill. For that was having our own kitchen team who knew about hygiene, cooking properly. The other thing was having hot meals. I personally don't enjoy having packed lunches. So it's like, say, for example, some companies would do packed lunches 13 days. 13 days of packed lunches is not nice.
Because it's cold.
Yeah, absolutely cold. And no matter how hot it was when
all
you prepared it,
something hot.
You might have it in a nice thermos container, but by the time it's... And it doesn't have to be elaborate, the meal.
Of course.
But very important is the soup. So those things, like, it's about making people comfortable. And giving a balanced and a nice, balanced, wholesome food. But most importantly for us was we told staff, we are going to produce hot meals every day.
Awesome.
And even if it means to sections where it's difficult. I have clients who said, Vinod, do you want to give us a hot meal today? Because yeah, it's tough on you guys. Like, you know, we'll be fine with a packed lunch. You know, one day, we're fine. You say no. And the way I explain it to my staff is, if the clients are having hot meals, You get to have the hot meals, right?
You get it too.
And they like that. And they understand that. And now there's no discussion. It says, Vinod wants hot meals. We get hot meals. We will give hot meals.
Yeah.
So those are the things. You know, simple things like that. And then again, those things about, at one time we used to use a lot of tin stuff because we thought that was good.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of imported stuff. But then we realized, no, that's not really. We can produce wholesome meals using the local potatoes, the local vegetables. I personally hate those sort of white bread you get maybe from a factory in Kathmandu.
Totally.
So we've taught the boys to make fresh bread. It means getting up
on the mountain
2 hours in the morning and making fresh bread at 5 a.m. in the morning, and they will make it.
I want to go on a trek with you so bad. I mean, because the food alone, I mean, yeah, I'm totally into the trek and the mountains.
Yes.
But this one sounds amazing.
What I can say is I want
maybe
to tell the world.
Maybe you can incorporate some tacos into the next
round. Yeah, we can. But what I say is what I can, I believe personally, anyone who comes with us once will never go back to anyone else.
Wow.
Because of what we give the attention to. Mm. And there's other things like, you know, the sleeping bags, the hygiene. Every time we take back the sleeping bags, it's washed. And the equipment that we use is washed every time. Those sort of things, which for some people it might not be a big deal for that. For us, it's a big deal. Very important. The other thing is also safety. Say, for example, we have satellite phones, we have mobile phones, we are contacting our office every evening.
Checking in,
telling them about the progress. Things like, we also have the system, and we really thank our partners in the US and our organization called Adventure International, who introduced us to the system where we check how well the client is coping with the altitude every day in the morning and evening. Mm. So basically, we're monitoring their pulse and what we call the
oxygen
level. And so that is excellent because we are looking at how people are walking every day, what's their appetite, how active they are. And then that added with all the data we are collecting as to how well they're acclimatizing, that gives us so many hours ahead indication whether that person is acclimatizing or not. And with that data, what we've also found out, maybe 5 years ago, I had a group of 45 ladies that we took up to Everest Base Camp. And it's quite tough in the sense that everybody wanted to get base camp, but we were collecting this data. And so some of them who wanted to go up anyway, we were able to sell them the data and said, you know, you're not acclimatizing well and you don't have appetite, you're not sleeping well. And so many a times that's easier for them to make the decision for us.
It's all the data.
And them as well.
Informed.
And the other things like oxygen, bottle oxygen and so on. So, I mean, only on my last trek with Binoy in May, there's a gentleman by the name of Greg. Greg Heaps, and he was, you know, he looks like a very burly, fit guy, and I'm sure he is. But it so happened that when we got up to 17,500 feet, he just had serious problem with breathing. I had bottle oxygen, I had to give him oxygen throughout the night. I could not stop him because once the body was latched onto this supply of oxygen, I had to give it throughout the night. And then, you know, I would like take him off oxygen and I put on the pulse and see if the body is then trying to catch up down to 40. And so I was able to do that. And that, I think we've been long enough to, I also say, when people say, oh, you're doing a good job, I say, we've had enough practice. Anytime.
Well, hearing you tell all of your stories about different experiences hiking the mountain, I've hiked Kilimanjaro.
I've done that.
And
too, yeah.
You have too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I just keep going back to like every night and then hot
that?
Meals. And oh, it was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which route did you do? Was it the 7 day Machema?
Machema, yeah. But we did it in 5 days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's quite tough.
It was, pole pole, right?
Pole pole.
But we did it. And I think about how important those things are that you mentioned.
Yes.
We used to look forward to the hot soup every night.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a lot of the little things made a really big difference.
Absolutely. At altitude, we always serve soup at lunch.
Yeah.
At dinner, because it's just comfort food.
Totally.
Easy to consume rather than just water.
Mm-hmm.
And so we compensate with altitude. You're supposed to drink at least 5 liters of water.
Yeah.
Because you not only use water to keep yourself rehydrated,
yeah.
but also for breathing.
Right.
You use at least 2 liters of water just for breathing.
Huh.
Because the air is so dry, the body has to moisturize the air before you can, otherwise it will destroy your lungs.
Okay.
So you need a lot of water.
You know how important it is to obviously pay attention to detail.
Yes.
What about surprising and delighting? Like, what have you guys done to surprise and delight any of your customers, your clients on the mountains?
Surprise as in?
Like, wow them with like something unexpected, or maybe I would be wowed by fresh made bread at like 15,000 feet. You know, I mean, that's a wow in and of itself, but maybe it's someone's birthday, it's someone's anniversary, and where they're like not expecting you guys to do something cool and special for them.
What,
is there anything comes to mind?
We're quite lucky because a lot of the clients that we get is through agents, so they would say, could you do this for this person? Obviously, looking at people's birthdays. And that's always very exciting for the people too, because our boys are excellent to produce cakes up at 12,000 feet, 13,000 feet. But I think one of the things that really surprises the client, and I like that and it's very important for us, is the food. We are able to produce just like very nice pasta. We produce dessert every day. We do apple turnover at 18,000 feet. Without, you know, overdoing it. Just that.
So what are their faces like when you bring it in? Do you bring it in?
The cooks bring it in.
The cooks bring it in. What do they say?
Oh,
it's like they're bringing
it
in.
They can't believe it. And then by day 10, they say, can we have that again? So we have things like, my dad has an excellent recipe of sweet and sour chicken. And we have had people come from Hong Kong and they say like, no, that's good. That's real stuff. So we're proud of those sort of things.
That's awesome.
I think food is important.
Oh, yeah.
Especially after a hard day's walk. And then the other things I want to put in, like, say, a proper clean toilet, a portable toilet. Those things are important for us. And the other thing is also showers. We are the only company that does hot portable showers. But you will only... you have to come to experience that, yeah? We can give you hot showers every day. Any altitude.
I did not shower when I hiked Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, so you didn't work...
Did you?
Come in. No, I didn't. Not. Because I got a free trip. But
I
have a friend who organizes trips in Kilimanjaro, and I went with him. So he does a good job. But I feel that we do a better job than him.
Oh, clearly. I can't wait. No, one of the things that I remember about, you talk about the whole hospitality mindset in Nepal, the namaste mindset.
Yes.
I love this. The visitor is God. Mm. It's so profound, and I'll never forget that description of really that mentality and that kind of mindset. I remember when we were leaving, the first time I was in Nepal, it was during Diwali, right? And so
October, should be around October.
Yeah, and it was the last, every day you celebrate something different, right?
Yes, it's a five-day festival.
Yeah.
First day is the festival of the crow, second is the festival of the dog, the third is the festival of the cow, fourth is the festival of the bull, and that coincides with the festival of yourself, where you have a shower and you have a drink and you can do whatever you like. Just look after yourself, have fun.
Self-care. Self-care.
And the last is the festival of the brother and sister.
Yeah. So I was there with my sister. But so I was there and they told us about, and on the brother sister day, there was another brother sister on our trip too.
Okay.
And so we had this whole ceremony. Yes. I went because the sister's supposed to make a meal for the brothers.
Sister makes a make meal a for the meal. Brother, and the brother is supposed gifts. To go and give for the sister.
Right?
You know the, how the story goes
no.
back?
No, so I mean, this maybe. Is, I
this
can't remember.
This is Hindu belief where there was a time in ancient Hindu history where a sister saved the life of a brother by basically, you know, sacrificing herself. As in like really fighting the demon or even giving her life for the brother. And so the Hindus see the sister as a power which can save the brother, you know? And the Hindus take that very seriously. So
that's beautiful.
All brothers want life,
yeah.
safety. So we go to our sisters and say, thank you for praying for me, for saving me, giving me life. And again, a good reason for our brothers and sisters to come together.
It was
They take it very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
That if you were in Utah and your sister was in Nepal, you would travel to Nepal for that festival to get your tikka and you come back.
Yeah. Yeah, so they walked us through the whole thing. Yeah. So we, the two brother sisters that were there, I was there with my sister Vicky, and we had the flowers, the marigolds.
Marigolds, yeah.
And we had the marigolds, and we had the tikka. And so I put a tikka on her forehead, she put one on mine, and gave her the marigold lay, same. And then we were kind of doing a little bit like tourist style, so she got me Pringles and like a bunch of different, I don't even remember, Snickers or something. And I got her DVDs for the TV show 24.
Wow.
Just gifts, whatever. We spent the whole day shopping for each other. It was such a blast. And then like Seth and
Have you continued doing that?
You know.
I can't do that.
Well, I keep telling her, I'm like, Vic, you got to make me a meal at least once a year.
Yeah.
And I'll give you gifts, no problem.
And then the other thing is some brothers will not have sisters, so it could be like in my case,
so
I have
like
two
adopt
brothers.
A sister
I can adopt
someone
a sister.
Else's sister.
Or say for example, your sister is in Nepal and you are here.
Yeah.
And there's no way you can go back. You can adopt someone
who
you would look up as a sister.
Yeah. So cool. Yeah. I mean, it's just it to me it punctuates that whole mentality of caring for each other.
Yeah.
Recognizing the divinity and the special nature that each human being has.
One of the things that you can experience during that festival, and even if it's wedding, Nepali people, if you are in the vicinity and you said, hang on, can I come into your house? Can I be part? And they will be so hospitable.
Come on in.
It's so welcoming. I find that fascinating myself.
It's beautiful.
There's always like the wedding. And they see especially a tourist come and say, you know, can I come in? Yeah, come in, you know.
You know what? It's so like funny crazy. Because I'm assuming maybe because of the Hindu faith, it's similar in India.
Yeah, same, almost same.
So I had just gotten off the plane and we had landed in India and I was in Agra, totally jet lagged.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was 2 a.m. and I was wide awake.
Yes.
And I heard this major party going on outside. Music and cymbals and dancing and loud and everything.
Maybe there's a wedding.
And so I went outside.
Yes.
Sure enough, it was a wedding procession.
Yeah.
And the groom
was on a horse.
Was on a carriage. Yeah. Bright carriage. Yeah. He was in like the whole
turban
and bright
flashy.
Color. Exactly. Yeah. You know. And so he's going down. And the whole procession, all the groomsmen, lights. And it was like Dr. Seuss. It was big, crazy horns and all sorts of music
lots of
and stuff.
Pomp and show.
Oh, yeah.
More noise than anything.
And like noise and everyone's dancing and they're drunk and everything else.
Yeah.
And they're just like happy and dancing to go get the bride, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
very important is that the louder the procession, the better. Because the bride family expects, will boast about that. They will say that the bride
it was
groom,
the loudest
they
wedding.
They came and made so much noise, and my daughter is really special.
Really special.
So they like that.
So much
they don't,
noise.
If they come silently, they're very upset.
Well, and so I was getting closer to the celebration, and I'm just fascinated. I'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
So I'm getting closer, taking some pictures, and kind of trying to be, it's their party, you know? But next thing I know, they're like, hey, come on in here. Where are you from? California. They're like, California.
We want to
come
hear.
On in. Dancing. They're like making me dance with them. And I got up on the carriage and congratulated the groom. And so it's just what a beautiful way to live where it's just.
Suddenly they're so open. And
embracing and come on in. This is, like you said earlier, your family.
Mm.
Like your team is your family.
Yes.
I think what a tribute to your business that. You have people coming back 6 and 7 times because
and they have also become a family.
Right, exactly.
It's become family. It's like, okay, how's Soksing? How's this? And can I have those guys with me? And so I think that's what's happened.
Yeah.
And recently I was also thinking now, you know, I mean, I see the whole thing about the people, my people,
who
help and part of the business. it's, you know, it's my responsibility, not in a way that like, oh, it's the burden. It's a part of life now. Hmm. It's not work, it's life. And one of the things about really the job that I do, I also tell my wife and I also tell my parents, because sometimes they feel maybe I work very hard and they say, what do you think of what you're doing? And I said, like, what I do as the trekking business, I don't feel that's work. Hmm. Anything other thing is maybe work for me, but there's no Saturday, there's no Sunday. So it's part of life.
That's amazing. You clearly have some very special things that make you as a person and a leader amazing, but also have really distinguished your business from others. But all of those things, they take extra effort. They could even be more expensive.
Yes.
You know, you're getting your team Gore-Tex jackets, you're providing soup, you're making fresh bread, apple turnover, you name it. You're doing things that are a little bit, other business owners, other leaders may say, you know what? It's just not worth it for my business because it's extra money, it's extra effort, I have to train people, I have to go to all this extra, it just seems like extra, extra, extra.
Yeah.
So what would you say to those business leaders and CEOs that may think that it's a little bit more effort than is really necessary?
No, I see the extras are very crucial because they give you the edge. And also, I think, I mean, isn't it sometimes difficult to find that edge to be different? I mean, if you know that these extras are essential for the business and of course they give you the edge, you know, I mean, I don't see why you should not do it, because those are essential. Clients are going to have excellent experience. So it's a, I don't see it as a no-brainer. Hmm. Those things are, you should go for it and then better the experience. And yeah, definitely it's going to pay off.
So even if you're running a software company or even if you're making plus, you know, styrofoam plates.
Yes. I think that extra, because it's required, it's making a better product, it's giving clients a better experience, is very important, I think, for me personally. I almost like to say, like, sometimes clients would want to do things in a certain way, but you know this is the better way. I mean, what do you do? It's easier to say, yeah, okay, fine, we'll do it your way. But I, myself, I would like to do it the way that is best for them. Hmm. And definitely it pays off, and they really appreciate that.
And they come back eight times.
It's sad some of them cannot come, because when they started trekking with us, they were like maybe in the 50s.
And now they're too old. They're seven.
But having said that, I'm now looking at various ways that they can come back, because now Nepal has lots of roads. So I'm trying to come up with programs where we can drive up to maybe 10,000 feet, set up a camp, and they are able to do short treks, and so they can come back. So I'm looking forward to seeing them again. So,
wow. Yeah. One last question for leaders that will listen to this.
Yes.
If there's one thing that they could do today to make a difference in their business in providing an excellent experience for their customers, what would you suggest that one thing be that they could do today?
I think, I mean, I have to speak from my experience, and when I really look into my business and was to say that what is most important is about looking after the personnel, about, you know, almost like you're so close to them, understanding them and caring for them, that they become part of family. And therefore, the result that we see is that whole system of the trekking business, you just, when people go on a trek, you just look at me, Binod, you don't even order your boys, you're not shouting at them, everything's working and it looks like a well-oiled machine. I say, it's a well-oiled machine. Once in a while I have to put the oil at the right places. But you must come to Nepal, and I definitely encourage all people to experience. We have managed to create a synergy
with your team,
with my team, that they look at it as their own, as a family. And you know, I just, the more I look into the system, the more grateful I am, and I want to do more for the people. So definitely looking after your personnel and really understanding them.
So if you foster like an amazing experience within your team and bring on the right people, treat them like you care about them.
Yes.
Like,
and I also want to tell you this thing about, like, last year, the end of the season. So we have got two seasons, one spring and one autumn. My father and myself, we sat down and said, we feel that we need to pay our boys well. One of the things that my dad pointed out was, what would be a situation where the boys felt that they were not paid well, and they came up to us and they'd said, sorry, you know, we might not want to work for you and this and that. It is important for us to also consider that, the cost of living and so on. And so what we decided to do is we upped their salary, which today in Nepal is the highest in the trekking business. Hmm. And obviously we felt the repercussions in the next following season. But then we are happy because it just paid off. You can see in the work, I've already said that our boys are really good. And so if they are even better, what more you want. So I think it's important to be considerate about the inflation. Country like Nepal, inflation is rampant, goes unchecked, and it's very important to understand, you know, how the boys are doing and how we can support them. Coming back to looking after the boys.
For sure. Well, I mean, if they feel like they're treated well, they are going to provide an amazing experience for your clients.
Absolutely.
That those clients are then going to be coming back to you because they feel part of this larger family.
Absolutely.
You know, Binoy, that personal touch.
Yes, Binoy, I mean, it's quite sad because I've been trekking for 28 years, so a lot of things that has happened and many things that have maybe earlier years, it went well for me. Maybe become quite numb, you know, with a lot of people and a lot of experience. But Binoy was recently trying to tell me, like, your guys, like, they stop and say, hang on, you know, your lace are undone, you probably do it properly. Or they just come up to me and say, the guy in the front is walking too fast, and they'll come up to me and say, you need to do that. Many a times they have checked me, and I said, one of the things I like and want to do is I always listen to my boys. It's never like I'm the boss. Like, you know, if you got a better plan, I will take it, but it has to be better. And why not? Yeah, I mean, there are so many people around you and you listen to them. But then if I have a better idea and concept, I tell them and they say, yeah, fine. So all that experience of many years has really taught me, you know, when I started, I was 18 and most of the people, 90% of them were older than me. And I have to call them, in Nepal, we don't call them just like by their name. We call them Dai, which is like bigger brother. Bigger sister. Yeah. I was able to get their respect because for me, it was always eager to learn, listen to them. Mm. So that was also important, you know.
It sounds like the spirit of Namaste is alive and well, in your
Absolutely.
Business in a very real and meaningful way.
Absolutely. And when you asked me, Binod, what do you do? And I said, I do this, be the highest swim in the world and this and that. Believe me, the thing we can do, if you were to tell me, Binod, can you do this? I can exactly tell you, yes, I can do this, I cannot do this. Many times I can say I can do this because I have a solid, dedicated team.
Right.
And I will go with them anywhere. I'm taking my boys to Mongolia this year in the fall because, you know, I trust my boys and I know, you know, they will. I'm taking them to Tibet, I've taken them to Thailand. And they always go, where next, you know? So, yeah, definitely.
Well, so awesome. I'm so glad we could talk.
Yes. I hope you will be able to visit Nepal. And
I can't wait.
I can't wait
to get back. And I'm so grateful for you sharing so much about your experience and your mentality and how you are a successful leader and business owner.
Well, I'm learning, but it's been a nice journey.
Well, and it's wonderful. And I'm glad we got to eat tacos together.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for introducing me to the original tacos. The pork ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what a joy. Thank you for
another
your time.
Interview anytime.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Taco Incidents. I'd love to hear your feedback, so hit me up on Instagram, email, phone, or, of course, over tacos. Check out our website, searchfortheperfecttaco.com, where you can watch the video version of these episodes and see all the taco action. And just when you thought Taco Tuesday couldn't get any better, I'll be releasing a new episode every week. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you'll be the first to know. And I'd be forever grateful, and definitely owe you tacos, if you'd leave a review of Taco Incidents on Apple Podcasts. So join me as we search for the perfect taco together and discover how amazing brand experience can empower you to thrive.